Welcome to Vox Vomitus, also known as Word Vomit.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Vox Vomitus. I am your host, Jennifer Ann Gordon, the author of the Kindle Award-winning novel Beautiful, Frightening, and Silent, as well as the Hotel series and Pretty Ugly. Joining me today, as always, is my Vox Vomitus vixen, Allison Martine, author of The Bourbon Books, which includes the award-winning novel Dibs, Since September, Move On Melinda, and the recently released this year, Climb the Salmon Ladder. Joining us today is, I'm not going to massacre your name, Demianti Biswas, the author of The Blue Bar. I hope I got that right. Your name. Okay. Demianti. No, like, I panicked beforehand and then I'm like, nope, I've got it. Nope, I'm going to screw it up. We're just going to call you D from now on.
Demianti. We've got it.
Demianti. Welcome to Vox Vomitus. You are technically coming to us from the future because it is tomorrow morning.
Tell us how Thursday's going, because we
how is Thursday? Is Thursday good so far? Because Wednesday's been a lot.
No, I'm waiting for the weekend. Let's put it that
way. We all are. Thank you so much for being here. Very early on your part, I know. I'm so excited to have you here to talk about The Blue Bar. Allison and I have our blue and sequined things.
For the record, I already told Demianti, this is not a sari. This is a table runner. I don't have anything pretty that I actually wear. It all just goes.
Fuck, that counts. I mean, I don't even have anything.
It all counts. I will say, earlier, Allison and I always go through like, well, what are you going to wear? What are our props? What are we going to do? And I'm just like, I have a blue sequin bra. Two of them. I have a blue sequin mermaid outfit.
I absolutely wear the mermaid outfit.
A sheer blue top. And I'm like, but I can't wear any of that because it's 20 degrees outside Fahrenheit, which
Fahrenheit.
Is in centigrade. I don't know.
I think you're below zero centigrade, aren't you? I can't.
Oh, yes.
That's below zero.
No, we definitely are below freezing. So, Demianti, thank you for being here. Tell us a little bit about your book, The Blue Bar, which is currently, before I forget to say it, a Kindle First Reads pick. I don't know if it still is that.
It is an Amazon First Read for December, and all Amazon Prime members can just go snag it right now for free.
The link is below us right now.
The Blue Bar is set in Mumbai. It is about a very determined inspector who is in love with a bar dancer, and neither of them are aware that they're being watched by this predator, this serial killer. So that's what the book is about.
Yeah, usually, you know, it's about a lot of things because this is a huge plot spanning many years, which I love serial killers.
You love reading about serial killers. You don't actually love serial killers.
Right. I do not love serial killers. Come on. Thank you. Clarify. I love reading about serial killers. I didn't know anything about, as you said, bar dancing in Mumbai. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is? Because in my brain, I was thinking one thing, and then I was like, oh, maybe it's something that's not that. It seemed much more respectable as the book went on than I originally thought it was going to be.
Well, bar dancing, it really isn't as common in India either. And even in Mumbai, it is now being frowned upon. So it was, you know, banned, as you can see in the book. It was banned for a while. And I don't think it is flourishing as much now after COVID. But this was something that it began in Mumbai, and maybe is there in probably Kolkata and Delhi, two of the other cities, but Delhi not so much. And what it is, or what it began as, was these women being on a stage and essentially just dancing to Bollywood music and doing it in a saris and, you know, Indian clothes or Western clothes, but none of them very revealing. And it was more about these men from the middle class, the lower middle class, who didn't have access to, you know, big time entertainment, or didn't have the money to go out and, you know, have a splurge at a big bar or something. They would go to these smaller places, and they would feel good about something that is quite rife with misogyny, which is they would take bundles of notes and they would shower these women with notes. And how far a woman would go with any of these customers would, in a lot of cases, depend on the women. So mm-hmm. in a lot of cases, they did have some kind of agency. I wouldn't say a lot, but some kind of agency, whether they would be pushed into prostitution or not, you know, kind of was different from bar to bar in Mumbai. And in the 1970s, 80s, not so much in the 70s, but in the 80s and 90s, and probably in the beginning of 2000, the scene really kind of exploded, because the Bollywood movies kind of included those scenes. So all the so-called vamps, which was the what they called the women who drank, any woman who drank and danced was a vamp. And, you know, she was the bad woman, and she was used as a foil for the heroine who was
the heroine who, of course, all would never do anything.
All covered and all those things. Yes. Both misogyny in different ways, one making a product out of a woman and the other kind of, you know, taking her away her agency and saying she belongs in the home and her face needs to be covered. So, you know, so these kind of stereotypes kind of made in Bollywood movies kind of made this bar scene very popular. At one point, it was very glamorous, and some of these women went on to earn a lot of money. After a while, a conservative party came into power in Mumbai, the state, and then they kind of, you know, went into the banning of these bars.
And that's something you cover in the book, where it's like, like as Jennifer mentioned, the book spans decades, where you've got a character you meet when she's younger, and then we're fast forwarding, and during that time, the bar scene had been shut down, and now it's reopening, and what is that going to look like, and who's going to be brought back from that? But it is interesting that you say it's like, oh, because Bollywood, and then they're having to dance to these Bollywood numbers, but it's like, they're not getting paid like the Bollywood stars are. They're like, not quite the same. No.
So it was an education even for me. I didn't know as much about the bar scene, because in India, women don't really go to these bar dancing kind of situations. They would not go to a dance bar. And this is not a normal bar. It's called a dance bar, which is very different from a normal bar. A normal bar is where you would drink and, you know, chat with friends, get together, family goes there. Dance bars in Mumbai used to be these places where only men went in groups, or, you know, businessmen, slightly older age group of men. So they would all go there and they would feel nice about spending money.
I love how, like, that whole showering the women with banknotes was like a thing. And it's like, okay, well, they can't do that anymore, but some of them still will. And I just thought that was such a specific thing, because here, I actually do remember having to write back in law school a whole dissertation on where the line was with strip clubs and the whole idea of, like, tucking the money in and how much is being shown and all that. And, like, showering seems relatively innocent because you're just dropping the money. You're not sliding something under a string. But
there's a lot of all of that going on, but not supposed to. So, like, a lot of it is there are laws, and there's the execution of the law.
And then there's the police looking over here.
Yes, especially maybe any of that. But I would say, like, your picture that you were painting, obviously, of, and it was realistic, of the bar scene in Mumbai is so, you know, in a way, I'm going to use the word innocent, but obviously there's not a lot of innocence going on in your story. It seems very innocent, women not taking their clothes off, men, they're technically not supposed to walk through the audience, or touch them or any of these things. So I'm someone who did burlesque in, like, a theater world, also in bars. And when we would do burlesque in bars, it was, there's here in the United States and where I live in New Hampshire, there's so many rules of like what you can and cannot show. I mean, we thought it was so many rules, but like these women were not taking off any clothing, but they were dancing, we would say suggestively, and giving the eye to people.
Yes, because, well, we are talking about India about, you know, 25, 30 years ago. India now has changed. If you look at Bollywood, it's changed. It's, if you look at the steps, you know, the Bollywood heroines do now, it's completely different. It's much more suggestive than the ones the vamps used to do 25 years ago.
And they're now the heroines.
Yeah. Well, times change.
Yeah. So Bollywood has completely transformed. India has transformed because, you know, bar dancing happened in pre-liberalization India, because pre-liberalization India was where the West was not, you know, supposed to do business in India. So, you know, a lot of the manufacturing and all of that was all outside of India. India is now open for business, I think, since 2000 with the world. And that's kind of led to an explosion in growth and also in the transformation of Mumbai. I mean, Mumbai has always been sort of India's glamour and financial capital. It continues to be that. But now Mumbai is home to the most expensive residence, one person residence in the whole world. And it's home to some of the, because if you go to Mukesh Ambani's home, that is, I don't know, probably about 25 stories tall. It includes gymnasiums. It includes, he's one of the top 10 rich people in the world. So, you
know, if he's showering you with money, it's probably actual gold bars and it could hurt.
He's just
25 stories up.
Yeah, I mean, he has a home which is like, it seats, it has a ballroom that seats 500 people. So that would give you an idea. So
you know, has, and we all need that.
Yeah. I live in a duplex. Absolutely the same, right?
Well, right outside, not very far from where his residence is a slum where people survive on less than, you know, probably $3 a day. So the contrast is staggering and it's vast and it's continued to grow. And sadly, I think it will continue to grow. The only people it benefits is authors, because the contrast is so fascinating.
A great place to set a whole series of books.
Like you're doing. Well, and I wanted to point out, like you had mentioned the disparity there, and you have that in your book, because you have these characters who are basically going, I'm making choices to support my family, to do what I need to do, even if they aren't the best choices, they're the only choices I have. And then you have Bollywood stars in the very next chapter. So there's definitely some disparity going on there. And you mentioned manufacturing. There was some concern about manufacturing of sequins and some other items. I'm not sure I should say them. It's where we're 13 minutes in. Can I say nipple clamp?
You can definitely see
some. Because we were like looking, who had that nipple clamp and where were the sequins made? Well, these are expensive sequins and they're not ones locally made. We've got to find these. I knew nothing about sequins going in. I'm like fashion, nothing here. I know
things about sequins, and I was looking for like a clip-on earring or something that could or mime. Well, I don't have that.
Do have a background in fashion, so at one point of time I used to source sequins and I used to get embroideries done and I could tell you about the various qualities of sequins. So
weaving that into the story, like I knew this about sequins, I'm gonna put that to use. I love it.
I don't know if I said that, it just came in and now I'm realizing
that's where it came from.
A lot of the author life is not deliberate. We fall into accidents. Thankfully most of them are happy accidents. When the novel is published, that means it's a series of entirely happy accidents with lots of unhappiness for the author.
It's always amazing to be either interviewed or talk to somebody and they're like, did you mean to do blah, blah, blah on purpose? And as authors, we're like, I didn't mean that at all, but I want to, I'm going to say yes, because it makes me sound so much smarter, no. Or that my whole life has been leading
for me. It's too stressful to kind of say something like pretend to be someone I'm not.
It's too early in the morning for you.
No, even all the time. I mean, I just cannot handle it. I'd rather be just plain old me, and then I know exactly what I'm saying, and I don't have to remember what I said somewhere else. So I'm consistent.
Look, I tell the truth, and I'm not always even consistent because I just don't have a great memory. Like, my kids are like, I'm doing this. I'm like, no, did I say that? Sure, let's go with that. That's fine. I'm just tired. That's fine too.
We're just exhausted.
But I did love, and this was something I don't know if I've ever seen before in a thriller. You have these notes as it goes on, because for people who are like, what the heck are you talking about? There's dancing, there's sequins, there's nipple clamps. There's also Bollywood street
serial killer. Street food, the yummiest food I've ever described in a book.
I was very close to be sitting here eating samosas during the interview, but I'm like, I'm going to get it, like, my lipstick all over my face if I'm sitting there doing that. But you mentioned, like, Indian street food, and Indian food is my love language of comfort food. And I haven't had real homemade Indian food in, like, 30 years. So I'm stuck with whatever I got in my freezer, which is just sad, but it's still delicious. But I'm not eating it live, because that would be rude to be just dropping potato down my shirt. So I'm not going to. But you weave it in really lovely throughout the whole story. And it also just gives a sense of, like, the relationships between the people, as, like, who's eating together and what are they eating? And then, like, okay, well, this
and how are
making
they
it
eating?
The right way, but I'm eating it anyway.
Are they feeding each other?
I did a lot of things which came organically in the book, and there were some things which were not so organic, and which I had to kind of, you know, I was very aware of the Western gaze. So I was very aware that I was translating a lived experience for someone who has not lived it. And I was very aware that I was throwing so many things and the kitchen sink at them, because you know, if you're reading a thriller set in the US, you know the names are familiar, the characters mm-hmm. are familiar, the setting is familiar. So you can just focus on the story. But when I am giving you a story set in Mumbai, most of my audience probably hasn't been to Mumbai. Some may not even have heard of Mumbai. So I was aware of that fact. When I was editing, not as well as drafting, but when I was editing with my agent, with the editors that I worked with, and I had two helping me, you know, streamline it. So I kind of did those lists because I was like, the reader needs a handhold somewhere kind of have like a summary or a recall, but not in a very obvious, here's a summary of what happened.
Yeah, like, if you were not paying attention, these are the people in play, this is what we know
exactly.
About them. And well, it worked like, really well the way
yeah,
you did it.
It was it like seemed a, organic. It was like a word representation of what you can imagine his suspect list being like on a wall or whatever. And it made sense that as Arnav is getting these different suspects and pieces of information and things are shifting, he's adding to it, and it's helping us keep straight, like, okay, this is why he suspects this person, this why, because you've got kidnapping, murder, corruption, bodies being found without heads. So it's not super graphic, but at the same point, bodies being found without, like, hands, feet, and so he's like writing down all this stuff. There's also, who can he trust,
and maybe there's some sequins found on the
sequins
in a little, I wanted to make up like an evidence tag, but I was too lazy.
No.
Evidence.
No, I did have a whole lot of things going on. So A, there were the lists, and B, I'm very pleased that you noticed the food. I did put in the food, and that's A, because I'm a foodie. B, because Mumbai street food is the most amazing street food in India. Literally is the most amazing street food in India. The rest of it, I'm not talking about, but street food, hands down, you know, is absolutely amazing. And the reason I went into detail about the food, because I wanted it to be like a gateway for the reader, because I think an experience of a day is an experience of a day. So all of us know what a day is. All of us know what food is. All of us know what enjoying food is. All of us know how to express our love through food. And Jennifer was mentioning that they're feeding each other. But that's like a very, very common way to, you know, kind of, it has different nuances in different parts of the world. Yeah. But that's something.
I mean, it doesn't happen where I'm from. Like, oh, no. Like, besides a mommy and a baby. Like, I'm from New England in the United States. Nobody's feeding each other here in like a sexy, playful way. No. We just don't. We would be too ashamed. I will say, I always have a problem when there's food in books. I shouldn't say always, but as a I'm a vegetarian. And a lot of the food that is mentioned a lot of times in books is like very meaty and alive.
But to be fair, the bacon fat frosting on the cake in Josh Malerman's story, that was intentionally triggering for you. And he is also a vegetarian. So that was on purpose.
Yeah.
Whereas so I'm usually the one who loves all the food. And I know that I was like, I'm actually not turned off by that cake thing. And I think Josh wanted to stop talking to me at that point.
The food in this. Indian food is my favorite food. It's like no matter where I travel in the world, I always know if I can find an Indian food restaurant, I will be fine.
Did you have that in Iceland?
Vegetarian food.
We did have it in Iceland.
Indian food in Iceland. I love it.
I've had Indian food in every country I've gone to because most of the times I try to find food and then I'm like, that's just all pig face sandwiches or whatever. And if you can find an Indian food restaurant, it's usually an amazing Indian family that's moved to whatever country, and they're just like cooking with all of their heart and soul, and it's the best Indian food you'll ever have, and you're like, I'm in the Czech Republic. It should happen.
Well, but I loved how you even woven the food to the relationships, because I don't like, okay, so when you've got a thriller like this, there are a lot of things that happen along the way, and I'm trying to not do spoilers, but there are people who dine together early on who then we find out other things about them, and I'm like, oh, and you broke bread with that guy, and then it's just worse because there's something so intimate about having meals with people and that trust and that lifelong friendship and then being like, oh, so I guess you really didn't know them the way you thought you may have known them.
Yeah, I did try to put in a lot of resonance into the novel as I was copy editing, and this went through several drafts, of course, and every time they were like, so I had to kind of weed through for the inconsistencies, and while I was weeding through for the inconsistencies, I was like, oh, but this could connect very nicely to this, and so just put in a brush stroke of something here. So a lot of the tinier details that you see came in much later during the very end stages of the book, because that's when you begin to see the final book in its form. Because
it's like draft five. And you're like, I finally know what my book is.
It's in shape now. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, and I loved how you did weave in all these different things. Like, as I'm reading it, we're getting everything from, like, there's Bollywood stars and there's a land mafia and then there's the bar owners and all these things. And then they do all make sense together. But at first, you're getting these disparate glances of these different places. And I love how you wove them together, because sometimes you would read something like that and then some of them would just be completely irrelevant. But no, these all made sense. You just had to keep going through to see, okay, how do these people know each other? And what are the secrets that they're hiding? And some of the chapters are written from the point of view of people we don't name. So we have to figure out, oh, who is this person? And what is item number? And I'm just like, oh dear. And then it was a very big oh dear when things were revealed later on. I was like, okay then.
I really always enjoy hearing from the POV of the murderer. I will say that. That's just like something I really like to read about. We also heard from, we'll say, and this isn't too big a spoiler, like the villain's kind of, I don't want to say helper, his helper. Butler, his housekeeper. I
was like, Alfred, if you were Batman.
I was going to say, it's a reverse Alfred thing, because instead of helping Batman, he's helping the Joker.
Yes. We do hear from him. The reason I have these points of view is because you get to know the backstory without stopping for the story. So you know bits and pieces of the origin story of the villain, let's say. Because if I kind of pack it in the last, you know,
One chapter, you have one of those like James Bond villain,
or you have like Hercule Poirot kind of sitting everybody down.
You know what happened? All of this, and then you're like, this could have been a short story.
So for me, I'm not a fan of that. I mean, I love the mysteries. I love Agatha Christie, and I cannot imagine how her brain would have worked. It would have been a fascinating place, you know, her brain. But for me as a writer personally, I kind of feel that I want to give the reader a sort of what I would like to call a 360 degree experience. So, you know, they are with it throughout, so they know what's what. And on a second reading, if anybody ever chose to, a lot of the things would make sense, but at least they know. So I don't want the reader to not know. I feel the reader is giving me their time and I should respect their time. And I should A, entertain them or give them escape, which is what I guess a thriller is for, but also give them an experience where they don't feel cheated. So it's not like they didn't know or something was withheld and that twist was not plausible. So I don't huge, you know, unbelievable twist.
I appreciate that.
I like a thriller when I go, I can, like, I thought that could have happened. Not that, oh, I guessed that from the moment it started. Not that at all. But like, as you're reading it, I want the reader, and as a reader, I want to go, I have it narrowed down to two people that I know. I don't want a stranger coming in the end of the third act, like, it's been me the whole time.
We're like, who are you?
Who are you? You haven't been introduced.
Right.
I do want to ask, so this is the first in a series of Blue Mumbai murder thriller books.
Yes. The second is already written,
Okay. So is this, and I hate to like compare it to a different series, but like I was thinking of the Dublin Murder books by Tana French, how it's about Dublin and the crime scene, but it's it doesn't always follow the same characters. So what can you tell us about the second book in the series?
Is it book shaped yet? Because you've written it book shaped the book yet?
Well, it's going through its third draft. I've got my edit notes from my editors as I speak. And in the next 20 days, I would kind of gut it, eviscerate it, and put it back together. So the gutting process, in fact, begins today. So
it's a good thing. So right after this, you're gutting it and like...
right after this, I'm going into surgery. But my book is. I'm so thrilled that, you know, you thought of Tana French, because Tana French is my personal goddess and I kind of go and worship at the altar every time. Because, you know, I can never be her. I don't know if I want to be her, but I want to, you know, be able to create the same kind of, you know, the texture of experience, in the sense that it's not just a crime story. It's a lot more.
It's a character story.
It's a lot more textured and nuanced than that. So for me, more than the plot, of course, the plot is absolutely important, but even more than the plot, for me, the setting and the people, I just place a lot of importance in that, and Tana French does that.
And you're talking to two people, Allison and I, always, every time we talk about our own writing, we're like, plot schmott, does my book even have a plot? And then like we add the plot later. It's just like,
sadly, I don't have that.
Had a plot.
No, I don't have that luxury, because I have to kind of give proposals to my agent or my editor. So I need to have a plot, because if I don't have a plot, what am I talking about?
So there's samosas in Bollywood. They're like, Damayanti, that's not a plot. But I said samosas in Bollywood. Not enough. What if I throw in some sequins? Not a plot.
Sequins makes a plot.
So to answer your question, Jennifer, this is not like Dublin Murders, but it is, in the sense that Mumbai is a huge part of the setting, but the same detective is there. Okay. So you have the same detective. It's okay. A different case.
I'm
different.
Glad because I'm already...
No, the old cast comes back, but I can't spoil who.
Don't spoil it. But I've already dreamcast who we're going to have. I don't know if you've seen RRR because everybody's seen it. So have you seen that yet, Damyanti?
Which one?
RRR, the movie.
I haven't yet.
It's like this sensation out of Bollywood that's taken the West by storm. It's been nominated for Golden Globes and all this.
I've never even heard of it.
Okay. My husband had heard of it. We watched it. Everyone in his class has seen it. Most of the class that he teaches, they are Southeast Asian. So all of their families are like, yes, this is amazing. And he cannot justify watching it.
This is a Tamil movie then. It's not a Bollywood movie.
I was going to say it's called Rise, Revolt, Roar. That's like what the RRR stands for.
Yeah. Now, I've heard of it. I haven't watched it because it's not really my genre of movie. It's like these, you know, sort of Quentin Tarantino, but in a very different way.
It is completely over the top. Like someone throws a tiger at some point. We are not talking reality based at all, but it is very, very fun. And the lead actor is so handsome and he plays an inspector. And I'm like, that's Arnav. Also, he has a mustache through half of it. So I'm like, that's the mustache. I'm mostly just picturing the mustache. I will have to send you the picture later just for the mustache.
Send me the picture. I want to see the handsome mustache man as well.
Very handsome. I mean, they're probably, you could do, there are 1,000 hot men that you could pick for Arnav, but he will be my Arnav. So you might have something else in mind.
I thought it was very stereotypical to have Arnav as like a good looking man, but somehow that's how he came to me. So I was like, okay, I tried to make man. It didn't work. So I was like, okay, never mind. So I'm not, I don't like, for my first novel, You Beneath Your Skin, the protagonist there is good looking, but he's not like what you'd call, for starters, he's 42, 43, so not somebody, an engineer. Yeah, an engineer would not be like...
So old.
Younger than me, but whatever.
One, I don't know. I couldn't help it. Tara is supposedly not bad looking, is quite gorgeous, and Arnav is good looking as well. I tried my best. I tried to make them not very good looking, but it didn't work. So I said, let it be.
Don't let them be beautiful.
Let
them be beautiful.
Just let them be beautiful. And you know, I think as authors, we do kind of fight against that because a lot of times what we're writing is something we want to see and feel and be. And it's really hard to be like, all right, well, this character that I'm like putting so much like of my heart and soul in, and I want Tara to fall in love with him again. Mm-hmm. Like, is he going to be like an ugly cop with like...
In real life, I don't put as much importance on looks, I'm not really attracted to looks. In fact, good looks kind of make me take a step back, because I found that, and because I'm from the fashion world, you see, so that used to be my background. And one point of time, I was like all models and everything, and I find that. And no shade on good-looking people, but I do find that good-looking people sometimes are able to sort of coast through a few things because of their looks. And people don't realize that bias that they have. They tend to get a few things without really going through the journey that some other people have to, at least in the beginning of their lives when they are young. So what that does is that makes them kind of unaware of the struggles of the rest of us. Unless I've spoken to them for a while, I would be like, okay, I can be friends with you, but do I want to be friends with you? You know, or do I want to date you? Because I don't know. I mean, you know, are you aware of the kind of struggles I have to go through on a daily basis?
So I will just say, I came from, my background is theater and dance. Before writing. And yes, a lot of people in my life have been very ridiculously good looking. And I will say my husband, who's watching this right now, because he is our producer, is ridiculously good looking. Yeah. And when I met him, I was just like, no. You He's are. Not, yeah. Like, you're too good looking.
I'm not going to talk to you. You can't.
It's not going to work because you would never understand what this is. What this is, you won't get because you're gorgeous. Luckily, obviously, we did get to know each other, and somehow our mutual weirdness was fine. But I understand what you mean, because when I met him, I was just like, oh, he's too good looking.
That is so weird. Which is not entirely fair, and it's a bias and prejudice, but it is what it is. But now I'm aware of it. Like, once you're aware of your own biases, probably it reduces a bit.
Exactly. Because I remember telling him this, and he was just like, you didn't want to get to know me because I was good looking? Like, that is, did you just assume I was dumb? And I'm like, I'm awful.
But there are people who, because they had things handed to them because they were attractive. I will give a very simple example. My daughter, who is now 12, she is still a very good looking young girl. But when she was little, she was absurdly cute. And we would go out and people would just hand her stuff. And we're like, this is a bad example. Like, we'd be at the farmer's market and some guy just hands her a pumpkin. Oh, she's so cute. Give her, like, you gotta pay for that. You can't just have a pumpkin. But it's like, oh, well, she's really cute. Like, don't get that in her head that she can just get stuff because she's cute.
Because by the time she's 16, she'll be a nightmare.
I know. And it's just like, you know, she's a little girl. She doesn't know any better. She doesn't understand the concept of money. She's like, I have a pumpkin. That's all she cares about. But it's that kind of mentality that if it doesn't get corrected, they go through life thinking people are always going to give them pumpkins. And you don't want that.
I've had good-looking people who have clearly grown up getting pumpkins.
And then they grow mustaches to be like, now I'm an inspector. Give me all your pumpkins.
The mustache, I think, maybe covered some of his handsomeness. So he was probably like, I'm too handsome. I need a mustache. So
no, actually, it is a very funny thing because I did a fair bit of research into the Mumbai police, other than, of course, Bollywood and everything. Indian culture, the Mumbai police has an outsized impact because just like you have the NYPD in the US, I guess, right? Like, there must be police forces everywhere in the US, but NYPD, everybody knows because of the cultural impact that they have. So the same with Mumbai police, right? And the thing is with Mumbai police, you would not really find a policeman who's clean shaven. They all have a
mustache. Like, they have to grow it when they get inside.
I don't know. It's really funny because they all have a mustache. Like, other than the women don't.
Like, yeah, okay, to be clear, like, the women don't necessarily have
that's them.
I'm just pointing out.
And it's funny, maybe like, they have to have them to be promoted to inspector.
Yes, like, I grew my inspector stash.
Like, it becomes, you have to have it for the inspector.
Because we joke that that's the rule around here for firemen, that if you want to be a fireman, you have to grow facial hair and they won't let you on. Like, this is like flame protectant or something, that you have to have facial hair. But it is not as true with the police officers, but it still is. And I want to say it's like the chips thing, like, got your mustache. I don't know.
That's from the 70s.
I know. I'm old. Okay.
The 1970s.
Oh, dear.
Oh, that's, I love it. This has gone off the rails.
That's fine.
This is what we do.
I know.
Sequins.
Sequins. Shiny object. Come back
shiny,
to the bar.
Shiny. I know. For people who are only listening to us,
they have no idea. You're like, what are you talking
what's
about?
So sequins? Funny is I have somebody who listens to us all the time, and then she had like the day off and she watched us and she was just like, I didn't realize that you guys legitimately had like props and stuff for like where we were just like, oh, this is what's happening. This is what's happening. And she was like,
sometimes we forget to do that, to actually tell people who are only listening when we are doing something absurd. Like when I'm pretending to twirl my imaginary mustache, I am twirling an imaginary mustache.
Right. And nobody saw when I did a finger mustache earlier and just scowled at the screen. So do we have a release date? I know it's very early days for the next book, because this the Blue Bar is January 1st officially, correct?
Yes. We do have a release date for the next book. It's the 24th of October next year. And I remember the date because it's my birthday.
Oh, yay! What yeah. a great birthday present.
It is such a great yeah. birthday present.
So if it doesn't get postponed, like this one was postponed because it became an Amazon first read. So once they pick it for an Amazon first read, they need certain amount of time to do certain things that they do in
we'll
their
call wisdom. That Amazon magic. Whatever that
yeah,
is.
They do their magic behind the screens. So with the second book, that's the 24th of October, mm-hmm. which is why I have to give in my developmental edits by the 20th of January. I'm saying this in public.
We're going to hold you accountable.
I'm
going to message you later. Damianti, where are your edits?
I'm working over New Year, guys. I'm working over New Year's Eve. I have to because I have a mini deadline in between. My editor's working over the new year.
That's incredible.
Well, I was going to say, so I don't know if you celebrate the new year. One of the big themes in your book is Diwali, which is earlier. So it's mm-hmm. like, and that was one of the things, like Diwali takes place earlier than it's not set at the same time as like New Year's, that's January. So different New Year's for different cultures. And mm-hmm. I've seen Diwali celebrations from local cultures here, and there's like the purple lights and all of that. So I was picturing all of that there, but I cannot imagine what it would be like in a place where the whole culture is celebrating rather than just everyone around me in a certain local pocket of a community.
Right. No, Diwali is not really the new year. It's the new financial year. So you close. So traditionally, all shopkeepers or anybody who was doing accounting would mm-hmm. close their books on Diwali and begin the new books. But it's not starting the year. The year really starts somewhere in spring, which is somewhere around the first or second week of April, when various parts of India, they have their New Year's, because that goes with the spring, the oncoming spring. So you welcome the spring and you welcome the New Year. So Diwali literally has a lot of different meanings, of course, some of which you've read about in the novel, which is victory of good over evil, et cetera, et cetera. That's a celebration. But it's also considered the, the celebration of prosperity or the, worship to the goddess of wealth, who's Lakshmi, who's not mentioned in the book because we already have too many names.
We can't handle another name right now.
So the goddess of wealth is celebrated. And mm-hmm. the light is there for two reasons. Some people believe, of course, it's the good king who vanquished the bad king, and then the good king who was exiled was welcomed back into his home, and his people kind of lit up the whole city in welcome, and we carry that tradition. The other explanation, of course, is that we are welcoming the goddess of wealth into our homes. So the better lit and cleaner, so it's like, you spoon clean everything, and the better lit and cleaner your home is, the goddess of wealth kind of blesses you and you prosper. So
that's why I Swiffered today.
I don't think that's enough.
So yeah, so Diwali is definitely Dashera is when the good king kind of vanquishes the evil king, Ram kind of vanquishes Ravan. And then because he's exiled and he's coming back to his kingdom, so it takes him 20 days to come back to his home. And on Diwali, we celebrate his homecoming. So he is the good king come back and, starting the reign of justice and et cetera. So it starts off an era of justice and goodness and et cetera, et cetera. And I kind of wanted to set it within these 20 days because it gives it a kind of punctuation to the thriller. So mm-hmm. if anybody is clued into the culture, they'll take another layer of meaning. Mm-hmm. And it gives me exactly 20 days to play with, which makes it a very, I had to do evening, morning, what time. Mm-hmm. If this is happening to this character, what is this character doing? So it was a nightmare. Yeah. And my publisher, they are the most beautiful people because my copy editor actually created me like an Excel.
Like a day runner.
And they have everything. They have like a character sheet and they have a timeline sheet. So now when I wrote my second novel, the character sheet really helped me, but I was also very grateful that they're going to do the timeline sheet and point out the errors of, you know, what kind of
like this can't happen. But that
yeah, this can't happen. That sort of thing.
Yeah, like you can't have this person in two places at once. They were in a hospital room. They are not.
I do have some of those, and my copy editor very gently pointed out that actually, no, this is
not right.
Yeah, you're not writing science fiction or fantasy. We are in the world of thrillers, so please let's stick to that.
Let's stick to a normal 24-hour day, and nobody's in two places at once. There were no evil clones or anything like that.
There's no weird mirror side, like, special effects.
No.
Dimyanti, it's been amazing to talk to you. Thank you so much for being here. And people who are watching this live or listening to it or watching it later, make sure... this is a first reads for Amazon. So if you are an Amazon Prime member, go and download the Blue Bar right now. If not, you're going to have to wait until after January 1st. And then you're going to have to like...
No, there's a correction to that, Jennifer. If they are not a Prime member, they can actually go and enter a Goodreads giveaway right now. They're giving away 100 copies of Kindle. And that number is growing fast. So the number of entrants. So I'd love some entries there as well. So all of December, really, before the book releases.
And that's on Goodreads, that giveaway.
That's on Goodreads.
Yes, it's on Goodreads, the giveaway.
So if you're not a Prime member, enter the Goodreads giveaway. And if not, just pre-order the book.
Pre-ordering is good.
All of this can happen.
No, because a lot of readers... feel that they can order the book when it is released. But what we authors know is that the pre-orders actually count towards the sale of the first week. And that's a number that the publisher watches very, very closely. Yes. So if you're planning to buy any book whatsoever, it's always nicer to the author to kind of pre-order the book, because when you do that, the publisher feels that this is a good author to punt on, you know, to invest more money on. Then the author can actually get another contract.
Yes.
We want authors showered with money. Not bar girls, that might be illegal, but shower the author, that's fine.
I say shower bar girls and authors with money, because both of them are valid career choices.
Yes, but if it's illegal, we don't want you breaking laws. I don't know what check your local ordinances before you throw money at people, okay?
I say throw money at whoever you want. That's me. But thank you so much for being here. Everyone who is watching this live or watching the replay, stay tuned for next week. Allison and I are going to be doing our eggnog extravaganza. We're going to have to buy eggnog, where we're going to recap our year. We're going to wear glittery outfits, maybe some blue sequins.
I'll be
with
there.
A big sweater over it because it's freezing.
Will I have to wear my tablecloth?
You're going to have to wear the tablecloth for sure. But that'll be next week. We will be, you know, drinking eggnog, talking about the year. Dimyanti, thank you for being here. We are so excited about the Blue Bar and about your next book and everything else that is going on with your career. And thank you so much for being here.
No, thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you, Allison.